You know that the European government debt crisis has turned a corner when investors line up to buy Greek bonds.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California and is supported by Constant Contact, offering small businesses online tools like social media, event, and email marketing from one login at constantcontact.com.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the global perspective on business and economics. Officials in Greece were all smiles today after a sale of five-year government bonds went very well, with demand eight times higher than supply. In the view of Greece's finance minister today, the country has succeeded in, quote, achieving an exit from the crisis or is very close to an exit from the crisis, unquote. Now, while it's nice that Greece can borrow again, the austere budgets continue and unemployment remains above 27%.
The fact of the matter remains that the Greek state and the Greek banks are deeply insolvent.
Yanis Varoufakis is an economics professor at Athens University. He told the BBC today, while investors are attracted by the higher interest rates that Greece offers, they also see Germany standing quietly by Greece's side.
It's very clear that Berlin have an ironclad determination to declare victory on the front of the Greek crisis before the European elections in May. So they are signaling to markets that the official sector will stand behind the fresh Greek bonds and that the European Central Bank is going to have to turn a blind eye to the black holes in the center of the Greek banks. But none of this is going to end well.
Greece hopes to raise about $3.5 billion with its first bond sale in 4 years. Chinese Premier Li Keqiang gave a speech at an Asian Economic Forum today, claiming his country's overall economic performance is good. But as he was saying this, economic data was being released from China showing that exports from the world's second biggest economy had slipped 6.6% in March from a year ago. Imports were down more than 11%. Marketplace's China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz is in Shanghai. Morning, Rob.
Good morning, David.
So both of these numbers out of China were far worse than the forecasters were predicting.
China's decline in exports can be explained by the fact that it's comparing this year's exports to last year's. And last year's exports numbers were acknowledged by most economists to be exaggerated. Chinese exporters were overstating the value of their shipments so that they could bring more U.S. dollars into China to make money on a reliably appreciating Chinese currency. But this year, the renminbi is depreciating, so the number is more accurate because they're not doing that kind of trickery anymore.
Which leaves us with the other sad little number here, the decline in imports to China.
Right, and that's a number that's more dependable, and I think the 11% decline surprised a lot of economists. It's the first month after the Chinese New Year, and that holiday tends to skew numbers a bit. So the fact that imports to China during March declined by this much is a sign that China's still in slowdown mode.
Will China hit this target it keeps talking about, 7.5% growth in GDP this year?
Premier Li was distancing himself a little from that number today, saying that if the economy grows around that rate, that would be fine too. In fact, most economists think it would be best to just do away with this GDP growth target because it just encourages more stimulus packages to sort of tweak the growth rate, which is the type of behavior that got China in this mess in the first place.
Marketplace's China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz from Shanghai. Thank you.
Thanks, David.
And how about stocks? London's FT 100 index is up 0.1%. The key stock index in Hong Kong went up 1.5%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are mixed.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Battelle, solving what matters most in national security, health and life sciences, energy, and the environment. More at battelle.org. By Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery, using a patient's DNA to tailor transplant care at vanderbilthealth.com. And by Nuance Power PDF, designed for easy implementation to accurately convert, combine, and collaborate on business documents. Nuance.com/PowerPDF. PDF uncompromised.
It was 30 years ago the country that started the Industrial Revolution and fueled it with coal scaled back its coal industry. Britain announced it was closing many of its deepest mines. Today, only three remain, and two of those are facing closure. But is there now a case for Britain reopening these and digging a little deeper? As part of Coal Play, our series on the future of coal, our veteran correspondent Stephen Beard reports from the county of Yorkshire in northern England.
Bob Fitzpatrick is one of a vanishing breed. He's one of the few remaining deep-pit coal miners in Britain. He believes the UK has blundered by turning its back on an indigenous source of energy.
The coal's here, and you can get it. If the mines are mined properly and managed properly, they are viable.
Even though the UK has shut down most of its mines, it still generates 40% of its electricity from coal. The bulk of it is imported from the US and from Russia. Local politician Jane Hamilton says after the annexation of Crimea, Britain cannot rely on the Russians.
The gas supplies and the coal supplies from Russia are pretty doubtful. President Putin has got his own agenda, and I think we should be very, very careful and look to opening mines because we don't know where our energy is going to come from.
The case for UK coal began to look even better last week when it was revealed the country could have vast reserves of the fuel on its doorstep.
There's likely a huge store of coal under the North Sea.
Andrew Angus, an energy economist, says there could be 20 trillion tonnes of the black gold lying under the seabed off the coast of Britain, enough to keep the lights on here for centuries.
So we still have abundant resources should we choose to turn back to mining.
The problem with deep pit mining, let alone with burrowing under the sea for coal, is that it is horrendously expensive. And, says importer Nigel Yaxley, it's now very much cheaper for the Brits to ship in foreign coal.
At the moment, prices are depressed, partly because of surplus coal in the US thrown up by the shale gas revolution, and partly because of slowdown in growth in China.
The future of British coal seems to depend on much higher world prices and much improved technology, making it easier to mine and cleaner to burn. The case for UK coal? Not yet proven. In South Yorkshire, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
We talked to former miners in our Appalachia and their Yorkshire about life in an underground economy. Audio with some strong still photos can be found at marketplace.org. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
You know, with modern technology, there really is no such thing as getting lost.
Well, you can if you really, really work at it, but that's the point. You have to try to get lost. You have to disconnect yourself from pretty much modern society.
Yeah, but who's going to do that? I'm Kai Rizdal. That story next time on Marketplace. We'll show you the way. It's from APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.